Mistrial, an inside look at how the criminal justice system works and sometimes doesn't. Written by Mark Garagus and Pat Harris and narrated by Mike Dawson.
Another thing about the Scott Peterson case that has always puzzled us is the widespread, almost unanimous opinion that Scott was guilty before one piece of evidence was introduced. If you examine every high-profile case of the past two decades, O.J., Michael Jackson, Casey Anthony, Robert Blake, the Duke lacrosse team, Dr. Conrad Murray, you'll see that every one of the defendants had some group or constituency that argued on behalf of their innocence. But Scott Peterson didn't. When we took over the case, we soon found out that it was considered an accepted fact that he was guilty.
Mistrial. Available now at iTunes, Audible, and AdamCarolla.com.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. I chose to get on a minute. Get on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We appreciate that about you.
Yeah,
we need you. We love you. What's going on, Drew?
Dude, your affect is awfully bright. What's going on here?
I was just talking to Jeff Goldblum for a while.
I met him too.
I'm in a better mood.
I would say it's hard not to have a bright affect at talking to him.
I've been in a better mood, just in general. Let's say
we'll talk about why.
I'm just working on it a little bit.
Let's talk about Jeff Goldblum first. He reminds me a little bit about being around Robin Williams. There's always stuff, positive stuff coming out of his mouth, but all kinds of stuff. My last little exchange with him, he goes, "We're healthy like horses."
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what that means, but I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel good.
Yep.
It's like healthy like horses. Okay. Yeah, we are. Huh. Awesome.
I agree. Very positive man. Yeah. Very good energy. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And just in general, it's just been...
well, we're going to get into that. What's going on?
I'm not on a grind schedule. You know, when I get real grindy with my schedule, it's just sort of... It's impossible... Not impossible.
Riddle me this.
It's difficult not to be agitated a lot because you're running from one thing to the next.
Yes.
And then when anybody does anything on top of it, you're already in sort of pre-agitated state. So
full agitated.
Yeah, it's little things like you say to somebody, yeah, I can meet you at the house, but I need you there at 3 p.m. straight up.
Because
And then they waltz in at 3:23 and you're pissed.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be pissed if you had nothing to do that day.
When you're really that busy, when they come in at 3:04, you're pissed. To be fair. And then you feel like an asshole.
No, that's you. I'm not that way. But I had it this morning. And I had a couple of hot moppers come into the house. Hot moppers are guys who take tar.
Roofing, right?
They can do roof or shower pan or whatever it is. And there's a new breed of cat. And I've tried to explain this to everybody all the time. The people, look, you got LeBeau, your tile guy. Those guys are few and far between. Most of the guys.
We just call them Frenchie.
The guys who end up in the business, the construction business, the hot moppers, the roofers, the drywall guys.
Yeah.
They're not there because they're guys who like to work with the, you know, people romanticize, not in LA. You know, maybe there's a Bostonian version of this where your dad is Norm Abrams and his father used to build log cabins and ornate furniture, and he passed it along as a young boy. Used to take that does not exist in Los Angeles. What exists in Los Angeles are just desperate Mexicans just fighting for their lives. You know what I mean? Like just doing work that no one else will do or does do or can do or
even
whatever it is.
Are they new?
Yeah, nobody you know's son is going to be a hot mopper. It's just that's what it is. It's a bunch of desperate.
Maybe I should.
The worst students of your high school just fighting for a living.
Yeah.
And not because they want to, because they have to.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no joy or love or pride. It's just if I do this or I go out and live on the street.
Mm.
So they do it reluctantly. Oftentimes.
That's the new breed of cat, or is there a new version of that?
It's just that's what it is. That's what much of construction has boiled down to in L.A.
Yeah.
And so you're not getting the professional, courteous, whatever anymore. You're just getting the people struggling to live. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why they're here. They're here because they were horrible students. And I speak about this clearly because my best friends were Ray and Chris.
Oh, I met a new guy. Steve. Steve Hawken?
Oh, I'll talk about that in a second. Okay. Remember the name. I don't remember.
I think
the last name's a little bit different.
I've got it wrong. Harden?
There's a DeHart.
Steve DeHart?
DeHart.
Mm. He was with you when you put the billboard about the beach.
Oh.
Sorry, that's Steve Barkin.
Barkin. That's it. Yes.
Steve Barkin.
Okay, we'll talk about that. But finished Chris and Ray.
Yeah. We desecrated a billboard. Yeah. Steve was with us.
I want to hear all about it.
All right. Now, as I say, Chris and Ray are in construction. Mm. What are they going to do tomorrow morning? Go to their construction job.
Yeah.
Do you think they like their construction jobs?
No.
No. But that's what they're doing.
Chris kind of
does. They'd rather do anything else, especially when it gets hot outside.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right. Okay. But what are they doing? Well, they were horrible students, and their parents don't have any money. So this is what they do. Now, look. You hang around for 30 years like those guys do, and you work your way out from, God willing, from digging ditches and cleaning up garbage, you know. So they get a little managerial, whatever, but it's not, believe me, I was with them in the ninth grade. They didn't announce that they wanted to make, you know, $71,000 a year overseeing guys who put up drywall. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So, but
actually, then they were like, well, I'm going to make $71,000.
Well, that's true. But this is what their lot is.
It's so funny. Think about it. If I talked to 22-year-old Chris, going, someday you're going to make $71,000. He'd be like, oh,
right,
Nirvana.
Right. Hey, you could have done $31,000 with me.
Yeah,
and you would have had
stocking shelves in the middle of the night. Yes,
anything.
Yeah.
So it is what they ended up in. And one of the things I realize that. The difference between the good students and the bad students, and it's the one thing most all these guys lack, and it's a 1-2 punch, punctuality and communication.
Hmm.
Most all these guys, when you talk to them, there's two different versions. There's the, I was at the industrial metal supply. I didn't know if you wanted to bonderize steel plating or the aluminum steel plating, so I just got the aluminum. And you go, well, I wanted to bonderize. And they go, yeah, I don't know. I didn't know what you wanted. And you go, do you have a cell phone? They go, yeah, well, yeah. I have a cell phone. Yeah, yeah, you do. Why didn't you call? And they'll pause and go, I didn't know what you wanted.
But
and
I'll go, you know
that's
it is?
Why you're supposed to call.
Yeah, it's like for some people, the phone weighs 1,000 pounds. Like, it's like, that's the barrier to lifting up and talking.
I know, but no matter, I'll give you very basic, very basic communication one. I'll tell Gary Fultard at the other shop. When you go to Home Depot, you need to tell people you're going to Home Depot because I might want something. Understand? I probably am going to tell you, pick up.
I might want something.
You go to Home Depot and I will put something on your list that I need. Always. Always. But what does he do? He goes.
Just remember, his phone weighs 1,000 pounds.
And then when you ask him.
You have to behave accordingly.
When you say to him, Gary, why didn't you call me? He'll go, I thought you knew. And I'll go, you want it 8 in the morning? I was asleep. Like, how would I know? Well, Rob should have known. It's like, all right, but we didn't. But why not do what I asked you to do? And so that's the one thing. They don't communicate. Punctuality.
Do you know why
they
don't communicate?
I have, I know two things. I know what kind of set in their ways. Like, I know if it's broke, don't fix it. Like, they have a thing of, first thing they have is a repetitive thing where it's like, I just don't do this. And when I don't do it, I don't ever correct anything. It's just, I am who I am.
But
you
just
get what
right.
you get.
It's almost
and,
like,
and,
it's
and
almost
there's
like,
stuff that's good. There's a lot of good stuff. And then there's stuff that doesn't work and you can't fix it.
It's almost like anything that causes a change of course or requires a change of course requires like a discipline. Like, you have right. to acknowledge it, be aware of it, execute it, plan the change, make the change, rehearse the change,
but you,
keep
but
doing
the
change.
But the thing that's weird is their
none
life,
of those things ever happened.
I'm looking at Nick here, I don't know why, but their life
Sorry,
is
Nick.
So much harder than ours. It's so much harder. That's the thing. It's not, I know you're not saying this, but it's not out of late, you know, there are versions of this where you just go, oh, that person's too lazy, they don't even do anything. These people bust their ass. And this is actually an easier way to avoid some more ass busting.
You know what it is? Let me tell you what this is. A great example of how people, hey man, you just got to change. Just change your ways or change how you're feeling. Change is freaking hard for people. And this is a great example. And this is a great example of how even a simple change requires contemplation, mm-hmm. planning, execution, repetition.
Right. If that was in their golf bag, if they had a club of change.
Ooh. Wow.
If they had a club of change.
Nine iron of change.
In their golf bag, they wouldn't be working for you. You know, they wouldn't be here now. You know what I mean?
You could argue they could be still bad at change, but at least could do a change.
They wouldn't be available. Right, I'll put it to you that way.
But they can't change.
The one thing I was thinking about when the hot mopper said, I'll meet you at the house at 3:30 in the afternoon, and then I went there, and it was this like crazy, hot moppers are showing up. We got to get this and that and that and this, you know, ready for the hot mopper. The hot mopper showing up. And then 3:30 came and went, and then 4:00 came and went, and then 4:30 came and went. And I was like, what the hell are these guys? I didn't contact them, so I called Matt Fondelier, and I said, where are the hot moppers? I said, 3:30. Call them, text, whatever. Oh, they're going to be there 5:20. So not only that, there's a whole bunch of things all these guys do. There's that part. But there's the part where you're going to show up 2 hours after you told the homeowner you were going to meet him at the house. You have the text and contact of that guy's assistant. Is there any part of you that would like to reach out to that person and go, oh, by the way? Because the way I'm wired, if you say I'm coming at 3:30, I will be pacing around the front door.
Yeah.
It was 2,000 degrees outside. And inside, because the air conditioning is screwing up, and I wanted to jump into the swimming pool.
Sure.
But I wasn't. I can't. They're going to knock on the door. I can't be in the swimming pool. I can't even turn the TV set up past 9 because they're going, it goes to 100. I won't hear the knock.
Yeah.
I won't hear the knock. Yeah. I will literally, I'll be like pacing around, and I'll be like, oh, geez, it's 3:00. I could take a 20-minute nap. No. Don't chance it. What if they come 10 minutes early? No. They call, and they say they're coming at 5:20. And I said, 5:20, that's pretty exact. Well, that's what the GPS, that's what the Waze or whatever says. I said,
they're leaving
wait a
now?
Minute. It's like four. Yeah. Like, where are they driving from? Yeah. The Midwest? And they're like, no. I get the second one at 5:20. They're coming at 6 or something. Eventually, they roll in at night.
Yeah.
And
that's after 8 now.
No, it's like they rolled in like a little after 6, but it was no communication, no anything. And then there's this weird thing where it's like, you want us to do it now? Sort of, but I want to go eat dinner. Like, I don't know what we're going to do. And then I said, here's what I do, and they still can never do it. I'll go, when do you want to do it? And they'll go, we'll do it in the morning. And I'll go, okay, you tell me the time. Do it whenever you want. And I will be standing by the door at that time. But you pick the time, but then you can't be late. 7 a.m. Okay, I'm going to set my alarm for 6:50, and I will be standing by the door at 7 a.m. Of course, nobody's there. Well, they showed up at 7:15. But the point is,
that's pretty good.
It's pretty
progress,
for you. You would not like it if it was a colleague.
No.
And what I'm saying is punctuality may be about the freest, easiest discipline you could ever do in terms of riding your own ship. In terms of, look, you can get some therapy, you know, take a Tony Robbins weekend seminar, fine. How about just making sure you're never late to anything ever?
I think it's a great point. And the only way you can really make sure of that, you actually have to be early. That's why I'm always early, because I'm always expecting contingencies. And if the contingencies happen 1 out of 10 times, I don't care. I'm still on time.
I like to. Let's drill down. Oh, you got something in front
I
of
do.
You there?
I have something called drill down. Married at First Sight. That's right. It's a new episode every Thursday, 9, 8 Central on Lifetime. It's about Chicago singles who agree to get married legally to a stranger the moment they first meet. They first meet in marriage. It's a team of experts. They create 3 compatible couples based on these matchmaking paradigms, these scientific matchmaking paradigms. And then the couple meets as they're walking down the aisle, and they see each other for the first time at the altar. Crazy.
I still bet it's a higher. I bet 10 years, if they get married, they stay married, I bet in 10 years they beat the LA average.
Could be. After several weeks together, they must decide. They get the opportunity to stay together or divorce. Full episodes on demand at MyLifetime.com, or you can get the Lifetime app and you watch new episodes every Thursday, 9, 8 Central. You can watch that on Lifetime. It's crazy to see two people that have never met meet at the altar, get married, navigate that marriage, then decide, do they stay or do they get a divorce right then and there? The experts, you will see how the experts measure up against reality.
All right.
Lifetime, 9, 8 Central.
Before we jump on the phones, I was examining my own life and participation with tardiness.
Okay.
And I realized it was not a day earlier where I was doing a podcast, doing Ace on the House with Ray, where I was a full 13, 14 minutes late and have been late multiple times. Mm-hmm. It's not the rule, but it does happen. One out of every 8 times, I'm definitely late. And I realized I know what my day is. I know what my schedule is. I basically know I'm not late with Mark Garagus. Because I know that guy's on a crazed schedule.
You know he's
and
on
I
time.
Never want, and yeah. I know he's on time. I know Ray's going to be here because Ray does a podcast before we do it. So I factor in he's going to be here, but I also factor in whatever else I have to do. And when I was shooting my TV show, we'd have a meeting over at the other warehouse on a Monday, and it'd be at like noon, and I'd waltz in at noon 10 because I knew everyone would be there. And I knew they'd be discussing the things they had to discuss, and that I would show up and start weighing in all the stuff they sort of pre-discussed or whatever it is. But when it comes to waiting, getting up at 6-something in the morning and letting in the hot mopper, I'm never late because there's not the same wiggle room. It's not like, well, that guy.
There's also not a bunch of stuff intervening.
Yeah, but I don't have a feeling of like, well, he'll knock and no one will answer, so he'll have a cup of coffee and he'll come back in 20 minutes. Like, I know, it's like that guy's going.
Yeah.
That guy's leaving and I'm not going to be a second late and I will stand by the door with this. And I realize I am a person who can be late, will be late, but most people I know are late to everything. Or they're like you, which is insanely on time. I don't know that many people that have this sort of leeway of it's case by case. I know when I need to be there.
It's hard to be on time. I mean, as a matter of course, if you don't aim for early.
Right.
So that person's going to be early a lot of the time. The person who's on time is going to be early a lot of the time.
Right.
And the person who is sort of aiming for on time is going to be late a lot of the time.
Right.
That's just the way it is. That's just the way life is.
Yeah.
It's hard to get it exactly right.
It's an interesting, it's a very interesting relationship that those people have with reality.
Which? The late ones?
Yeah.
The very late ones?
Just the late ones. Like Lynette's late.
Mm.
And there's stuff that is just not, you know, she's getting ready, and the show is 30 minutes away, maybe 35 minutes away, and it's now 25 minutes from when the show starts, and she's getting ready. And I'm just sort of going, this is mathematically impossible. Yeah. How you have to know, look, the show may start late, or we may miss the beginning of the show, but there's got to be part of you that knows this is not, it can't happen. Like, you can't. She's a perfectly sane person, but she has that kind of relationship where I'm sitting there going, this is an impossibility.
Well, there's differing versions of late, right? Remember we dealt with Pam Anderson and she was super late and you threw a shit fit about that appropriately.
I threw a shit fit about it because she was late when we did Donnie and Marie.
Was she on that show? I remember being on Donnie and Marie. I don't remember her.
We were on Donnie and Marie and she was the first guest.
Oh, yeah.
And we were come on after her.
Yeah.
And everyone wanted to get started, but we couldn't get started because she wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then later on, she was doing our show.
Love Line.
And she wasn't there either.
And then you went, start the show. Forget it.
Well,
forget it.
Stop and your point waiting.
Was, no, your point was, everyone else is enabling her. I'm not going to enable her. She's used to everyone waiting on her behalf and still kissing her ass when she shows up. So screw it. We're doing the show. And we started.
Yeah, but then her publicist stopped it.
No. Then she walked in like about 4 minutes in. And
no,
then
Drew, you...
That's my recollection.
You are way off this one. I'll right, tell you ahead, exactly tell what happened.
Be. I remember the publicist... I remember you going back and yelling at the publicist.
Yeah, I yelled at the publicist because the publicist stopped
But then we went and did it. We eventually started, like for real, I think.
Yeah, we did start the show. And the publicist stopped the show.
All right.
And we waited. She wasn't four minutes late.
Oh, I know.
She was much more than 4 minutes.
Oh, I know. It was like half 45 minutes or an hour or something.
We didn't stop because she showed up. We stopped because I said, look, we're starting the show.
Yeah, remember that.
Pam Anderson's supposed to be the guest.
Yes, you started the show like that, yeah.
She may or may not be here.
Yeah.
She's late. She's perpetually late. And Dr. Drew can't be an enabler. And by waiting, always waiting, it perpetuates this activity.
Yep.
So we're going to start the show. We hope Pam shows up. And if she does, she'll walk in.
Yep.
And if she doesn't, we have not helped to perpetuate this problem.
This behavior,
And this behavior. Mm-hmm. And her publicist, who was in the booth, told Stone and Stanley, whoever's doing it, said, no, stop it. Stop the show. And that's when I got the thing that the publicist stopped the whatever. And that's why I went nuts on the publicist. But I, to be fair, I went nuts on the producers, too.
No, equally spread the wealth.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah. No, but as I recall, now,
she did not come walking in.
She came in very soon after that, so it sort of begged the issue.
Oh, maybe after that, but we didn't stop because she came in. We stopped because they're fucking pussy piece of shit. Hopefully, doing nothing now, piece of shit publicist. Good, you got Pam Anderson. Have fun at the fucking county fair, you loser. Now that person stopped.
Yeah, okay, the taping. I can accept that. I just remember she.
You don't have to accept it.
I remember she came in pretty quick in the middle of the.
It's not a suppository.
No. My memory is inaccurate enough. Foggy.
You're right
about
there.
It.
It's just they stopped us. The producer stopped us.
Oh, I know they stopped.
And when I started screaming at the producers for stopping us, and they said her publicist shut it down.
I had put it a little backwards that you would first yell at the publicist. That's what got it going. And then she walked in. That's sort of my memory of it.
You would have remembered her. I remember the stage very well. You remember her showing up.
That's what I remember.
No, and by the way, Drew.
Yeah.
Why would I be screaming at the publicist and the producers if she walked in a few minutes late and we stopped. They stopped us. Yeah. Don't give me that face.
No.
They
I don't
stopped
want to argue
us
with
and
you.
They said, we got to stop
I'm,
you.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I'm describing to you the memory I have, which may or may not be accurate. That's all I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Should do a podcast.
No, memories are notoriously
you may be half right.
Inaccurate. They're,
I know. Trust me when I tell you it's not may or may not. This is how it went down.
Okay.
We didn't see her and stop. And I wouldn't have been outraged. I would have seen her. I got a note like, oh, there's Pam Anderson. Okay, I would have said, let's stop and get Pam Anderson out there. I wouldn't have gone on a tirade. They stopped us. And that's what made me. I screamed at everyone, let's start. No one wanted to start. I started screaming at everyone to start. We started, and they stopped us. What made me go bananas on them. I don't have a good memory either. I just know I wouldn't have gone bananas on Stone and Stanley if Pam Anderson just showed up. And I initially went nuts on them, and they told me it was her publicist that shut, and that's why I went nuts on the publicist, right? Yeah. I remember the publicist very well.
You were back in the green room yelling at her, remember?
Yeah, you want to know why? Because I said, you have a client, and your client's perpetually late, and it's fucking up people's schedules and lives, and you need to do something about that. She said, it's not my business.
And I said, no, I remember her going, yeah, you're right, but I can't. What am I to do?
Well, it's not my business to tell my client. I said, it is your business to tell your client. Tell your client to stop being late. And they're like, it's not my job. Hmm. What a fucking asshole. That's why I hated publicists. They're horrible. Ugh.
Line one.
Jeff, 31, Denver.
That's my call.
Yeah, man, what's going on?
Jeff, you okay?
Get the hell out of you guys.
Oh, you got it. What's up?
Yeah, you hear me? So, had a question kind of looking for an opinion. About a month ago, I had a seizure in my sleep. And first one ever had my whole life, and then after a bunch of tests, doctors came back and said I have epilepsy, and it was kind of wondering your opinion. I didn't know. I mean, in my mind, it seems kind of strange to go 31 years and never have this happen and now say I have epilepsy, but also I'm no doctor.
Right. Well, it is unusual, right, to have seizure disorder after all this time. My question to you is, why is that so? Wait, hang on a second. Can I talk to him?
No, it's a line. I'm putting him on hold because his line seems
but
so bad.
But why is it you had a seizure and your doctors came back and said, hey, you have seizures? Why is that confusing to you? That's my question.
I've sat here and heard this question 1,000 times.
Okay, but
Jeff, yeah.
You have seizures. So, you had a seizure, and your doctor said you have seizures. Why is that confusing to you?
So, not necessarily confusing. I guess when he gave us the diagnosis, like I said, it was the first and only one I've ever had. He said epilepsy, and then the other neurologist that came in the room and kind of also corrected him, saying, hey, back off. You know, we can't really call this epilepsy. It's first and only one, and then he was kind of shrugging his shoulders, and then that's what gave me the kind of confusion.
So, like, arose by any other name. You had a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You have seizures, period, end. The question is, was there some precipitating factor, like was your blood pressure low, or did you have an infection, or had you been drinking, or were you coming off benzodiazepines, all these things that could precipitate seizure, had you been sleep-deprived? If none of those things precipitated seizure, then you have seizures. You just had one. You have it. It's like saying, I never have fevers. I can't be a person that has fevers. And then I had a fever, and somebody told me I had fevers. How is that possible?
All right. But
the question is, do you need to take anti-seizure medication for a year or for the rest of your life? And to some extent, again, ruling out other causes, that's determined by what your EEG looks like. If you still have spike waves.
What's the EEG?
The brainwave test. If you still have spikes in your EEG, well, then that's going to continue indefinitely.
All right.
Does that make sense?
So, yeah. And
okay. Good.
All right.
And deal with your neurologist, right?
Yeah, yeah. Two neurologists. Great. They're all the neurologists. If somebody's board certified neurologist.
I'm not being dismissive, but
no.
He's got something, and he's got a neurologist, and you do what they say.
That's right. If somebody's a board certified neurology, that's it. They're there. They're at this level of expertise you can pretty much rely on.
I don't know if
common and simple like this, especially. Go ahead.
LifeLock, baby.
Oh, baby.
Study found identity thieves use personal data in an average of 9 minutes from the time they get it. They get it, and they right out there, putting it to use, draining that bank account of yours. Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. I don't like those odds. That's why I have LifeLock. Family has LifeLock. Kids, Lynette has LifeLock. Everybody's got LifeLock. Mm-hmm. Your identity can be stolen in ways you can't
creative
even detect.
Ways. Yeah.
You have to monitor your credit, man. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. If it detects your information, they'll send you an alert. There's a problem. Their U.S.-based restoration specialists will work to fix it. They are LifeLock. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all business, but LifeLock is the best. It is the industry gold standard, man. They uncover threats that you may miss. They are LifeLock. Drew.
Go to LifeLock.com or call 800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Adam. Again, that promo code is Adam, and you'll get 10% off your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com. That is one word, LifeLock.com, and you will save 10% now.
I'm interested in line 5. Nick, 36, Oregon.
Hey. Get it on. Love you guys.
Yeah, man. What's happening?
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge Love Line fan all the way back from, poor man days. But, obviously the Adam years are my favorite.
Obviously,
Drew, you are, staple. The Get It On podcast. So I'm listening to that, and I am blown away. Like, I think I forgot how much abuse was going on. I mean, it's insane to think, because I
you're listening to Giovanni's podcast with the old Loveline archive. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. The old Loveline archive. And it's like every night, it's just, every other call,
abuse.
Someone was abused.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Neglect.
Your phone's horrible.
And
go ahead.
Sorry. I'm wondering if this is a philosophical question. Like, what is that? Are we reaping the benefits of, you know, neglect and abuse in our society today? I mean, what is going on in our climate with the narcissism and the intersectionality? Is that a result of, you know, what?
The abuse.
That just uses.
Nick, great question. That's right.
These two lines have been so horrible.
Keep listening, Nick. 100% for sure. In my humble opinion, that is the case.
They have to be.
It has to be, right? Yes. We went through what – when the history books are written, this will be the era of childhood trauma. Interpersonal trauma, not war trauma or earthquake trauma, which is its own problem. But sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect was at all times high in this country. There's a famous study called the ACE study. Nick, you listening to us, probably from the 90s there talking to people or the early 2000s. Somewhere, I forget when the Kaiser ACE study was done, like maybe it was 2009 or 2010. Finally, they went, oh my God, all our patients have adverse childhood experiences, like 70%. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Yeah, no crap. No S. This has been going on. Adam and I were talking to it for decades. I was discussing it for decades, pleading for the medical community to please acknowledge what is going on.
Yeah.
Now it's getting better, but we have this giant pool of people who are traumatized.
Yeah, they all work at LAX.
Well, and when people are traumatized, or you know, they aren't regulated.
I have a theory. You know, everyone thinks, oh, your crackpot theories about crows or whatever it is, or dogs that sniff out cancer diseases. These aren't crack. I'm fucking serious about these theories, and they come to fruition.
Yep.
I know what I'm talking about. You have huge swaths and generations of women that were abused by their dad or never knew their dad or knew their stepdad a little too intimately, and guess who's poor, and guess who's forced to work, and guess who's working security at LAX? And you want to know why they're being so hostile toward you. Hey, I'm just a dude. Like, we never met before. Yeah, I am a man. I am a dude. And I represent something in your life.
Right.
And I'm giving you a little pushback. Like, I'm saying, like, oh, wait a minute. I'm in the fast track line. Can I keep my shoes on? And now
it's on.
We're back in junior high, and I'm your stepdad.
That's one version.
That's going on times a cajillion,
right,
everywhere,
and, right,
and it's ruining my life.
And
thank you. And let's not get them help. Let's get them out of that.
It creates narcissistic strategies, narcissistic defense systems. So narcissism on the rise. There, we saw that.
Oh my God!
But here's the part that bothers me. We were talking about this a little bit last week on this podcast, which is that when you've been traumatized like that, it leaves a piece of self walled off from communicating with the rest of your conscious self. And that piece is unregulated and sort of creating...
So that part of yourself where you can say to a stranger, have a nice day, or thank you and come again, I think that's the part
that's left,
hardest to reach.
No, that's the part that never develops.
Oh, it never develops.
So it's a part that's walled off and it needs attention, and it's injured and it's angry and has all kinds of feelings. But hang on. It's not regulated with the rest of your brain. It's not a conscious presence because you're always saying, oh, I dealt with that trauma. I don't think about it anymore, but it's there. It's there. It's creating this unpleasant state. And guess what happens when people of that get together and focus their aggression on one?
Mm-hmm.
Now you have pre-revolutionary France, you have the Aztecs, you have all these societies where groups have gotten together as mobs and acted out their aggression with a guillotine, you know, on a temple store, you know, tearing hearts, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And in periods of history where this has gone on, what the government has done is eliminate the town squares. If you go to Italy, the town squares are real small.
Right.
Because the big squares, people would congregate in mobs and do this and act down on somebody. Well, now we have this giant
internet.
Town. We have this giant town square. And everyone like-minded and echoing gets together and feels gratified going after people.
Yep.
Kathy Griffin, whatever. You go out and you go after these people and you try to crucify them.
Yeah.
And this is very dangerous.
Well,
super duper dangerous.
That's a two-way street, Kathy Griffin.
No, I'm just saying that's why I stood with Kathy.
A victim and a victimizer in the same human being.
Isn't that kind of the way it goes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I'm saying normally the victims are out trying to mob together and crucify somebody.
Yeah.
She got it coming and going.
But when you're a trauma survivor, you often recreate the past. And you become a victim again.
Oh, that's why Bruce likes it when I yell at him.
That's absolutely true. I've told you that.
I know. I've always known that. Why else would he do what I've asked him not to do so many millions of times? He's like, he does that thing all the time.
The papers. And
he literally just bring a stack of newspapers and do this. You know,
I got him out of that.
You did.
Yeah.
You got him out of it.
Yeah.
All right. True car. Let's not end up like Bruce driving a Honda minivan. No, he's moved up. Let's go to True Car, man. They can help you get a new car or a used car.
I've got a kid buying a True Car car right now. He's on True Car. Have you talked to him, Gary? Yeah. I asked him to call you guys.
Douglas.
He's looking.
Reached out to us yet. But.
All right. He's searching around. He's got all the True Car. I looked at him. He's checking the True Car website and everything. So,
what's he looking for?
I don't know. I'll ask him. I'll talk to these guys. Maybe get advice from Max Zapata.
Over seven? Yeah.
Well, you got a great deal.
Chris Wheels, Loxamana.
Yeah.
I can barely see over the dash.
You got a great deal.
That's true. Over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles from 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. So you're looking new, you're looking used, you go True Car, you find out what other people paid, you lock in your price, you get your certificate, you go into your certified dealer, Bob's your uncle. You drive away with that new or used, or in Max Pata's case, practically new but technically used car. So when you're ready to go new or used, you go to TrueCar.com. All right, Vegas, Caesar's Palace, coming up Thursday, July 13th. Some tickets available for that. We'll hang out afterward, have a drink. Why not? Take some pictures, crack wise, press the flesh, and all that kind of stuff. Why don't you get a book at book a room over there at Caesar's while we're at it.
It's going to be a good show.
Use a promo code, Adam.
I'm so jealous.
Always a good show. Vegas is great. Hey, man, No Safe Spaces. Me and Dennis Prager going strong. Go to nosafespaces.com. Check that out. Go to adamcarolla.com for anything you need. Drew?
Go to drdrew.com. Check out the family podcast there. Me and Spaz, Weekly Infusion. Some really good. Got a good one coming up with Scott Adams on the Dr. Drew podcast. Check them all out, please.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.